Last week for Conversations, I said in the first service, I've really enjoyed this more than I thought I would. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when you prepare a message, any of you, Marvin, I see guys out here that prepare messages. When you prepare a message, you know, it's always a process. And so, like, what I write on Tuesday is not what I'm going to say on Sunday. And what I write on Thursday is not what I'm going to say on Sunday, because everything's kind of raw and unrefined. And in this process, Tim gets to see what I say on Tuesday that I, you know, and I get to see what Tim said on Tuesday, because we're sharing this Google Doc and we're editing each at the same time. And so it's a little bit of a, it's a good process, but it's a little nerve-wracking of a process too when you're doing that.
You got to stay on script too. That's kind of weird.
So it's, but I've enjoyed it, because, and the reason I wanted to do this series as Conversations is because these aren't my values, these are our values. And you heard from a lot of staff, and you heard from Andy, who was an elder here at one time. So these are our values as a church. These aren't my values. And that's especially true with the one we're going to talk about today. So the one we're going to talk about today is outward focus. We are for this city, and we want to make a positive difference in our community. That has been a value at this church since it started. It was a value before I came on board. It was one of the values that attracted me. I was attracted to the grace-oriented aspect of the church, but also the fact that this is a church that really wants to serve its community. And when I came on board, we communicated that value as a question. And it was a question that, it was three elders when I started, David Carnahan, Gary Anderson, and Gary Van Warmer. And the question was, if we as a church ceased to exist, would anybody notice? You know, like if Murray Hills just one Sunday said, hey, we're done, we're closing the doors, we're no longer going to be a church anymore, would anybody outside of the church notice or care? And that was just a way to kind of ask, what kind of difference are we making in the community for those outside of the church? And that question has stayed at the forefront of my mind in the 20 years I've been here. And we've always tried to be an outward-focused church. But we want to get in a little bit, before we get into kind of the what and the how and all that kind of stuff, we want to spend some time on the why. And Tim, for those of you who don't know, Tim Malikian has been on staff here for 12 years, and he is our groups pastor. We originally hired him to just do groups, and he has done such a great job at that we ended up moving him into a executive role as well. So Tim leads all of our staff. So he's a groups pastor, and he's an executive pastor. And he's perfect to talk about this one, because one of the things Tim does is drive a lot of our vision as well. And we'll talk about that as we dig in this conversation. But Tim, thank you for joining me and for being a part of this. Let's jump into the why question, which is the most important question. Why is it a value, outward focus for the city? Why is that a value for us? And you can kind of talk about it personally, and then we're going to talk about it biblically too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of the reasons that we moved here. You know, we moved here 11, 12 years ago from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we were at a church that was a really serving church. And, you know, it was in a large city, so there was a lot of need. And so, I don't know, it was a very active church in the community. So, that was something I loved. We wanted our kids to experience that. And before that, I was a college pastor, and so we did a lot of serving things with college students, and again, we wanted our kids to experience that. So when we came here to interview 12-ish years ago, we stayed here in town, one of two hotels in town at the time. We stayed here, and then we went to restaurants, you know, and we went to different places while we were here for that weekend. And people would ask us where you're from. You know, you get that, right? So many of you have moved here recently, probably. You get that question, you know, where are you from? What are you here for? And all that kind of stuff. And we told them we're interviewing for a church or a job at Murray Hills Church. And I mean, literally almost every single time, the response I got was almost always, oh, that's a great church. I hear so many good things about that church. They do so many good things in the community. You know, we heard that. I mean, I've never forgotten that. You know, and so hearing that all weekend long, and I was, that impacted me. I mean, I really thought, well, you know, that sounds like something I'm looking for. That sounds really great. And so, I told Russ earlier this week, I said, I want to say something about you, but I don't want to, I'm not bragging on Russ, all right? You know, it's always uncomfortable when someone's talking about you on the stage, but I will say this. I think visionary leaders help churches, I think it helps churches serve better. And what I mean by that is, you know, Russ is just one of those people who his heart is really for the community. And so having a lead pastor that really loves the community, that is always thinking about ways, right, that mm-hmm. we can serve and we can make a difference. That's just one of your gifts, right? And so I appreciate that. But, I mean, you know, there are many, many others who have come up with so many great ideas and are aware. That's the thing. They're aware of what's going on in our community, and they see needs. And they say, well, what about this? Could we do something about this? And that's just one thing you excel at. And I just love it, you know, when we get in staff meetings and we talk about these ideas. You know, some of them seem like crazy and there's no way we can do that. And anyway, we've done all kinds of stuff.
I love being at a church that gives us some freedom to be creative.
Absolutely.
And to think about those things. Because we have some great elders meetings, and the elders push me a little bit to, you know, to open to what the possibilities could be. And we have some great staff meetings too. Same thing, and it's not just we have a staff that cares about this. Every single staff person cares about this. So it's not like Todd is just, well, I'm just focused on students and I'm only focused on 7th through 12th grade. So whatever y'all doing over in small groups and all that, I don't care. Our whole staff works together, and so a lot of our, you know, great ideas about service have come from Todd. It's not his ministry area,
right,
but he cares about the community. And same thing with Ebony. You know, she cares about the community, and so I love having a staff and an eldership and all that is all focused on the same thing. That excites me about that. The reason we're all focused on the same thing, I think, relates to the biblical foundation. And so let's talk about that and establish the biblical foundation, which is not hard for why we should be serving. So I'll let you get started.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard, right? I mean, if you learn anything about Jesus, you learn that he is one of compassion. In fact, the main reason that Jesus even came in our world in the first place was that God had compassion and love for us. And so there's a passage in Matthew 20. It's 25 through 28. And I love this one because, you know, this is one of those many times where Jesus is talking about he's going away, right, with his disciples. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, a couple of them, their mom had a great idea. Maybe one of them can sit on your left, one of them can sit on your right when you enter your throne. And Jesus is like, well, here's what Jesus said. Jesus called them together and he said, you know, that rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them. And their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And to give his life as a ransom for many. I mean, to me, that is incredible. And that says it all. That here is someone who literally left the throne of God in heaven. And I know we can't go there, but I mean, he literally left the throne of God in heaven to come to our world. And he didn't just come to our world. He came to a poor family in a poor city among a people who were under the authority of a power greater than them. They were basically enslaved by a stronger power. I mean, it makes no sense.
Yeah, and
it makes
that's
no sense.
It's really all you need. Like, you know, the Son of Man came to serve, not be served. But he showed that in every example, every person he interacted with. You know, right before he goes to the cross, he washes the disciples' feet and he tells them, go and do likewise. And so it's not an option for us. This value, there's some values that we can go, hey, that's something we would really like to see done. And this was just, it's not optional. I mean, this is Jesus, we're followers of Jesus. Jesus was a servant. He instructed his followers to be servants. And so that's what we got to do. And it was interesting to me as we studied and prepared for this message, all throughout the New Testament you see this. Like Apostle Paul got it, Peter got it, James got it, John got it, all throughout the New Testament. And there's all of these verses, like Paul in Galatians 5 says, you, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Use your freedom to serve one another in love. So the purpose of grace is service. We've been saved by grace so that we might go out and serve others. 1 Peter 4:10, each of you should use whatever gifts you've received to serve one another in love. You know, God has gifted each of us with certain abilities and talents and experiences, and we should use that to serve others. 1 John 1, 1 John 3:18 says, let us not only serve with speech, but let us serve with action and truth. You know, like we gotta serve with action. It's not just enough to talk about service or to say we want to be it. We gotta be doing it. And then James 2, this is my favorite one, the brother of Jesus. Suppose a brother or sister of you is without clothes and daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? And the church can be guilty of that so easily. Like we can, you know, we see somebody with need and we're like, ah, man, that's really tough. I'll be praying for you, you know. But you don't do anything to meet that need. You don't do anything to help that person. James is like, what good is that? And he says, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. And it's that important. I mean, serving is that important for James to declare that if you're not putting action to your faith, that's not a real faith. I mean, that's a dead faith if there's not action accompanied by it. So the disciples of Jesus get it. The early church gets it. And I think for most of church history, the modern church gets it too. I know we've had our series of failures and missteps. But I mean, we talked in the first about, you know, when you go to the hospital, you go to Baptist or St. Thomas. You're going to hospitals that were started by people of faith because those needs, when those hospitals were started, those needs were not being met. So the community of faith rose up and said, we need to take care of people's medical needs. You know, Salvation Army, we need to take care of, you know, food or orphanages. There's all kind of things that were started by people of faith because we're following Jesus and this is what Jesus calls us to do. So I want to talk a little bit because you pushed several years ago. I think this is an interesting story. We had a vision statement for a long time here where judgment ends and healing begins. And I liked that vision statement. I didn't craft it. I stole it from somebody. But I liked it, you know, like that's perfect, where judgment ends and healing begins. But about 5 years ago, you started pushing in our staff meetings to say, hey, we need to rethink our vision statement. Not that we need to do away with the old one, but we need to broaden that. We need to expand that. And you pushed us to do that, and we changed it to for Jesus and for the city. And so talk a little bit about why that was important to you, why you felt like we needed to alter that vision statement and talk about being for the city.
I'm like you. I love that too. I love that, you know, that vision that when we moved here, I really love that because that again was one of the things that attracted us to this church. You know, when we interviewed, but I read a book by a guy named Jeff Henderson. It's this little book right here. It's called Know What You're For, and it was actually its message was incredibly simple, right? If there's anything I know in my life, I know this: I am for Jesus. I mean, I am for Jesus. I'm to be for him. And I'm also, you know, for people. And so I'm for my family. I'm for people. And those are things I know in life. That's what I'm for. And what's sad to me is too often the church and Christians, we're known too often too much for what we're against and not what we're for. And that's tragic, man. It should not ever be that way, right? Because, I mean, Jesus was about compassion. He was about love. He took care of people. And, I mean, again, he gave his life out of compassion. And so we can never let that be the case about us, that people know what we're against and not what we're for. So that whole thing just really impacted me greatly. And yeah. So, I don't know, I just felt like judgment ends and healing begins is very true. And that hasn't changed, you know, for us. But I did feel like, I feel like our calling is broader than that. And so, I don't know, just that message just really stuck with me. And I just, I don't know, pitched it to the staff, and thankfully they thought it was a good idea. So it just worked out.
And I was probably the last one to come on board because I was kind of attached to that. You know, you've been at a place for a while, you get attached to that. We've been preaching that for years, you know. But the reason I finally got on board was I saw that we weren't changing that vision. It's not like that vision's going away and we're replacing it with something else. We're broadening the scope of that vision. To be a place where judgment ends is to be for this city. Because I'm going to tell you, you get a lot of judgment in our world. I mean, you get a lot of judgment in our world. And to be a place that's a safe place for people to come and to know you're going to be welcomed here, you're going to be loved here, you know, that's to be for the city. But what our vision statement does is it reminds us that our focus is outward. Like that's the church is one of the few organizations in the world that exists not for the benefit of its own members. Like most of the organizations, you join an organization, I'm a member, you join the AARP, or you join the country club, whatever. I'm a member, and I get benefits for being a member. This organization exists to serve its members and provide them benefits. The church doesn't exist for the benefit of its members. The church exists for the benefit of the community, for other people, putting other people's first and meeting their needs. And that's why the church is, you know, we're for the city. We want to see the people of this community thrive. We want to see this city thrive. And I think what really drove us into this, we talked a little bit about this, like when COVID shut down our second campus, like we had grand plans 5 years ago. We had grand, you know, we're going to start a new campus in Spring Hill, and then once that gets up and going, we're going to go to Mount Pleasant, and then once that going, we're going to go to Lawrenceburg. I mean, we all these visions, and that's a popular trend in churches today, multi-site. And when COVID kind of altered all of that, and we weren't able to keep Spring Hill going, and we kind of pulled the two campuses back together again, we really kind of hit reset and said, you know what? Let's just serve the city that we're in. Like, we're in Columbia for a reason. Instead of trying to franchise ourselves out in all these other communities, let's just really focus on our community. This is the community that God planted us in, and let's just focus on this community. And that's not criticizing churches that do multi-site. I'm not. We attempted that one time too, so I'm not criticizing them. But I'm saying it really honed us in on let's serve the city of Columbia. Let's serve Murray County. And that's been a good thing for us to just really focus our efforts on that. And it's we've been able to do even more doing that than we were when we kind of had our attention divided in a lot of other things. But I want to talk a little bit. I want to get into the what, because the why is important. But the what is kind of where the rubber meets the road. What does it look like for you when we say a church is for the city? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, the good thing is we've been for the city. I mean, it's been for the city since it started. And so I think that's there's a legacy of that. And I think that's truly important. You know, you asked the question when we started, you know, if this church ceased to exist, would anybody really notice? Would it matter, you know, in the city of Columbia or in Murray County? And I'm going to be truly honest, yes, I absolutely think. Now, the thing is, a lot of the good things that happen in this town, they may not know Murray Hills had anything to do with it. It may have started here and handed off, you know, but the truth is, and in so many of you are involved in so many different things in our city, I absolutely believe that our community would be worse off if this church ceased to exist. And so, I think all we're doing is really kind of putting words to what we've always been doing, but we're saying we want to do more, right? I mean, that's where the vision comes in. We want to do more because we know we can and we know we must. And so I think that's one of the great blessings about being a part of this church is all of our great ideas are not behind us. I think they're still ahead of us,
Yeah. You
know, and I think the impact that's going to happen in this town is going to continue. And, you know, like I said, whether they know anything about this church's involvement with it, that's, you know, maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But I do know this. I think the Spirit of God in serving has been in the people of this church from its start.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I'll go back to something that the elders talked about me when I interviewed, which is almost 20 years ago. And one of the statements that I remember them sharing with me was, we want to do, and the church was only 3 years old at this time, we want to do a few things well rather than many things mediocre. And they were talking specifically about serving. And what they were talking about was a lot of them had come from churches that had if you go to their website, they got a whole list of ministries. Like there's 50 different ministries we're doing as a church. Or there's 25 different ministries. And all these deacons are assigned to all these different ministries. And it's great. And they're good works. But a lot of them are struggling. And because they don't have enough volunteers. And they don't have enough resources and all that. And so they said, rather than us trying to spread ourselves too thin, we want to pick just a few projects and let's just throw everything we got into those few projects. Rather than kind of a shotgun approach, let's use a rifle approach and let's just really hone in on this. And the first example of that, I think, was Belize, the Dream 514 mission that, and we don't talk about it enough. There's so much incredible stuff that goes on through that that you don't even know is going on. But like before, we were given, you know, $100 to this missionary and $100 to this one and $100 to this one. And it was all just a very minor impact. And, you know, 15 years ago, whenever it was with Belize, we said, hey, we're all in on this one. Our whole mission budget is going to go there. And we're going to start sending teams there, and we're going to start partnering with churches there, and we're just going to build relationships there. And that's when the whole thing took off. And it started as a medical mission. It morphed into an education ministry. And I don't even know the numbers. Hundreds of kids have graduated because the people in Belize said, hey, we got doctors and we got nurses. I mean, we appreciate you guys coming down, but what we really need is education resources. What we really need is help getting our kids through school, paying the tuition. There's no free public education. You know, we need to help getting the tuition paid, getting books in their hands, getting uniforms in their hands. And we sponsor, you know, about 200 kids now and have done that for years. And we've got people here that are paying $250, $300 a piece to sponsor those kids so that those kids can go to school. And you got kids that have graduated now, and they're going to college, and some of them have come to college here in the States, and some of them are in college in Belize, and some of them are working in the tourism industry now, or they're working as teachers, or they're working as social workers in that country. We've got a young man that a week or so ago texted my wife, and he's graduating from medical school in Cuba, and he invited her to graduation. So we're flying to Cuba. Well, no, we're not. But we're pumped about him in Cuba graduating, and we're cheering him on. And he's going to go back to Belize and practice medicine. Patrick's his name. And they may be watching, because a lot of times Margarita and Giovanni and Crystal, a lot of times they're watching. And we're proud of those kids. But we got a chance to do that because several years ago the church said, let's go all in Belize. We can't change every country, but let's try to go all in here. And then it's kind of spread locally, too. And that's one of the things people love about Murray Hills is we put a lot of our mission emphasis local. And that started because 15 years ago, Zion Presbyterian Church called us and said, hey, we want to build a Habitat House. Will y'all help us? And we said, sure. And so we built a Habitat House. And then through that Habitat House, we found out that Habitat, like somebody needed their house fixed up. And I called Habitat and said, hey, they need their house fixed up. Will you guys do it? And they said, well, no, we don't. We just build houses. We don't fix them up. I said, well, who in town fixes them up? And they said, nobody. And so we got a group of people together and said, why don't we do that? Why don't we fix houses up? And Jan Kirkwright was a big part of that. She goes to another church now. They moved to Etheridge, I believe it was. But, like, we got together and over the course of years fixed up 60-something houses in downtown Columbia through an organization called People Helping People, which was a partnership between us, First Farmers Bank, and South Central Development. So we were using a government grant matched by First Farmers Bank, and the church provided all the volunteer resources. And like $500,000 got invested in downtown Columbia through that. And that's what happens when you just get focused in on one or two ministries and, like, we're just going to do this and we're going all in on it. Now, the trouble with People Helping People was we went so all in on it, we burned out all our volunteer leadership. And so that ministry doesn't exist anymore. There is another group in town that has been doing some of that. But we learned a lot of lessons there. So, like, when Pay Grace Forward rolled along, we spun it into its own 501c3 and said, hey, we're going to, you know, Barry's on the board for that. But I think that's our only member that's still on the board. We spun that off, and we're going to let them operate as a separate 501c3. They got an executive director there, Nick Key, doing a great job. And, like that's the kind of stuff that can happen, and that's the kind of stuff that gets me excited. Like, that's the stuff that I get fired up about was, you know, like, what if, like, I look at this room and the people online and think, if you could marshal this army of resources right here, you might could raise $120,000 and pay for the rent of a new food pantry in Mount Pleasant for the whole year. If you could just marshal this army of resources. Or if you could just pull all these people together, they might blow your mind and give $300,000 to start a Hope Center in Columbia. And, I mean, it is so exciting to see that stuff happening. And I could talk. I got tons of stories about it. That's the kind of stuff. And I love the fact that you say our best is ahead of us. Like, our best stuff's ahead of us. That's one of the reasons I want to grow the church. I want to grow the church not because, oh, well, we get to be a bigger church and all that kind of stuff. But the more people we've got, the more resources we got, the more time we got, the more volunteers we got, the more money we got to pour into this community. It's one of the reasons I love being a debt-free church. You know, we got more to pour into this community. And I do want to talk about the barriers just a little bit, because as I'm preaching this, I'm already thinking about the barriers, because one of them is exactly what I'm talking about. There's so many needs out there. But let's talk a little bit about the challenges. Okay, so if you're trying to be an outward-focused church, which we are trying to be, we don't do it perfectly, 100%. And there are struggles, and there are challenges. So talk a little bit about the some of the barriers that make it difficult to serve our city.
Yeah, one thing I love about what you've been talking about, that I love that we can serve and we can you know, share vision, get things started, but we don't have to control it, you know. And I like that, you know. That's you know, you plant the seeds, you supply the people, or supply maybe it's the money to start Crossroads at Home, or to start, you know, Hope Center Ministry, whatever it is.
Yeah, and can I interrupt you?
Yeah, I think that's what preachers just always do.
I think that's what we learned with people helping people was, maybe we're not the best people equipped to run certain ministries. So Hope Center comes along and we'll partner with you. We'll be the church. We'll be your biggest cheerleaders. We'll be volunteers in the ministry. Yeah. But you guys are better equipped to run your ministry, so y'all run your ministry. We'll partner with Well Outreach. We don't need to run a food. Not every church in town doesn't need to run a food pantry. Let's all marshal our resources together with a food pantry like that, and we'll cheer you on, and we'll support you financially, and we'll send volunteers over there. But you guys know how to run the food pantry, and so I think those lessons have helped us to lean more to the partner model than the we got to run it all model.
Yes, absolutely, and I'm so glad that we do it that way. Honestly, I think it's way more effective. But you were talking about barriers a minute ago.
Barriers.
And you know, I'll make a confession, and I tell you this because I think a lot of people think that, you know, pastors are out there on the forefront. You know, their spirits, they're always on fire. You know, and they're, you know, da 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 whatever. Well, I mean, yeah, there's some truth to that, I guess, but. But I want to make a confession that I feel like many of you will identify with. As when it comes to doing compassion, I mean, I'm a vision guy. And so, you know, thinking of things, or, you know, the man behind the curtain kind of stuff, that's where I thrive. I enjoy that. But the doing compassion part, I have to confess, I'm an underachiever in that. And I don't say that to you feeling good about it. I don't feel proud about it. There have been times when I was not an underachiever. There have been times when I'm really on it, involved, whatever. But I feel like I'm in a season where I'm an underachiever in doing the compassion. I mean, you can come up with the ideas, but for me, and I feel like what God is calling us clearly, not only me, but all of us, I said earlier in the first service, we have people, we all have different giftings, right? I mean, some people are great greeters because they're just smiley and they're just outgoing. And we got people who are great with technology, who make everything happen, you know, and those things are important. We have people who are great with kids. Those are extremely important. But one thing that we're all called to do, and it doesn't really depend, it doesn't matter on your gifting to a degree, we're all called to compassion. And yes, there are different gifted ways in order to do that. But the good thing is, there are so many opportunities in our community to serve others that anyone could find a way to serve somewhere, somehow. And whether that's, you know, whether that's a food pantry, whether, you know, with schools, we've been very involved with schools over the years. Because we were talking about this, and we got, you know, there's nothing in our community that touches everybody, really, for the most part, more than our public schools. And our private schools, because, you know, it's just so expansive, right? There's so many kids and families, and I'm married to a teacher, and I hear the sad stories every day about the struggles these children have and their families. And I'm just saying, you know, we've invested a lot in Brown Elementary, which is just right over here next to us, and so there are ways to serve, and schools. Maybe a great way, but there are plenty of other ways.
Yeah, and I think the barrier that makes me think of is compassion fatigue. Like, I love what you say. Like, we are called to be compassionate, and we know we're called to be compassionate. But we live in a world now where I see all the needs in every country, in every play. I mean, there's need everywhere. I go to Walgreens, and I'm going to see the need because they're going to be standing on the street corner, you know, asking for help. And I mean, like, and what happens is and that's a real thing, compassion fatigue, because you just see it and you either become blind to it, or you just get so worn out, or you become so overwhelmed, like, we can't possibly help everybody. And that's true. We can't. We're one church. We're one church of 200 in the city of Columbia, or in Murray County, I should say. we can't get, help everybody. It's going to take partners. It's going to take other people. We have to balance our needs as a church with the needs in the community. You know, I can't take our full budget and give it all to the community. Otherwise, we cease to exist. So, you know, we've got to kind of balance those things. And that's the biggest barrier to me to being an outward-focused church is capacity. And I'm talking about capacity of financial resources, because there's only, you know, I met with a guy, there's a new nonprofit in town called Duck River Dental Outreach. Dr. Dennis Gardner started it. And that's an incredible ministry. There's a lot of people who can't afford dental care. And he's providing low-cost dental care for people who can't afford it. That's great. I met with him like, I wish we could like buy his building for him or something. You know, you start thinking these things, but you just can't do it all. There's just only so much you can do. But so there's the capacity of financial resources. There's the capacity of our time, which is just, you know, we feel like I just don't have enough time to serve. I've been running, chasing these kids, and I've been working 50 hours a week or whatever it is. I just don't have the time. And then the other one is that the capacity of our compassion, which is the one we got to work the hardest on as Christians, because we can't be a hard-hearted people. It's just not an option for us. We got to remain compassionate. That doesn't mean we can help everybody. It doesn't mean we can serve everybody. It doesn't mean we can meet every need. I remember I got overwhelmed with this in Chicago or Boston. I can't remember what city it was in. I think it was Chicago. We went to Chicago for a trip, and we were walking them down, and there's people on the street corner, begging all the street corner. And it's just like, I don't even know where to start. And I ended up Googling, you know, homelessness in Chicago, and found an organization up there and just donated money to that organization. Because I'm like, I can't give money to every single person I walk past. I don't know how to do that. But here's an organization that's trying to meet that need. Let me support that organization that's trying to meet that need. And I think those are some of the barriers you have to overcome with serving. The other one I'll mention real quick, because I know I'm taking all our time, Tim. Sorry, here's the other one. Insider focus. The default position of any organization is to go back to an insider focus. And we got to fight against it as a church. Because what you start doing is you start sitting in the seat. I was about to say pews. You start sitting in the seats and you go, well, is this message really meeting my needs? Is this really feeding me spiritually? Or is the songs we sung today, did that worship really... Really, did I feel anything when I got out of that worship? Is that children's ministry? Are they teaching my kids? And I understand you guys ask those questions. But it's very easy to come to church and start thinking about what's in it for me and my family and what's in it for my age group. I mean, people have left this church because they're like, you guys are way too focused on kids. Like, what about us old people? You're way too focused on kids. I mean, somebody left the church over that. Like, you know, what are you going to do for my group? And what's frustrating about it is, I want to say, the more mature you get in the faith, the more you ought to know, this is for everybody else, this ain't for me. I mean, if we could ever adapt that attitude, that's what I hope my attitude can become. The older I get, the more I realize, like, I'm not doing this for me. I'm serving the next generation that's coming through. And if we can, you know, fight that insider mentality, and I know there's a balance, we can get into that. Y'all can talk about that in your groups and figure out what the balance is. I know there's a balance where, you know, my needs have to be met too, but I always want to be putting others first. And I think that's what Jesus calls us to do, is to put others first. I'll give you a quick example, and then we got to wrap up. I know this sermon, this conversation went way different than the first, okay? Monty and Melissa Hale, who you don't know, okay? They're grandparents of one of my softball players. So we had a tournament this weekend at Zion. They got up there at 3 o'clock Friday to run concession stand. They stayed to 9:30. That was when the last game was. Then they went to Walmart, bought all the food for Saturday, got home at midnight, woke up at 5 a.m., came back up to the ball field at 7 o'clock, and ran the concession to 9:30 p.m. at night. They're not paid for it, okay? That's not a paying job. They don't even have a kid playing. They got a grandkid playing. But they have the heart of a servant. And the heart of a servant, you just can't, I mean, and they're people of faith. And I guarantee you that their faith motivates them to serve. And that's the kind of attitude we got to have. You know, we got to be able to have the attitude of, I'm doing this for somebody else. And I talked to them a little bit yesterday, and they're like, we're doing this so your kids have money to spend on their program. You know, that's the kind of attitude we got to have. And those are the examples that are out there all the time. And you know, they'd probably be mortified if they knew I was mentioning them on stage this morning, because they don't want the attention or the focus. But that's the kind of stuff I think that we have to do as church people. And it doesn't have to be in church. Right. And let's talk about kind of what, last question, what do we need to do to make this happen?
Yeah, well, I just want to, I told you, you know, earlier that right now I feel like I'm really an underachiever. And so insider focus is real, and it's something we always have to watch out for. But I do also believe the better we take care of each other, right, we will do a better job of taking care of others as well, okay? So it's not an either-or thing. For me, I just want specifically, I want to give you a response to the fact that I feel like an underachiever at this moment. Here's what I'm going to do, and I hope that you'll be thinking about what you're going to do, okay? Assuming many of you are already doing plenty, okay? Thank you for your generosity. But for me, you know, I will be volunteering regularly at the Well Outreach in Mount Pleasant when they open. It's a good fit for me. I want to do so. I mean, I don't want to just be an idea guy. I want to get my hands in it. And I've worked in many food pantries and many places in the country over the years. And that's just a place I know that I can serve, and I feel good. I feel comfortable there. My small group will be doing that. Our staff will be doing that. And so it's a new and a great opportunity to do something and to serve. And so I think that's the thing. Compassion fatigue, that may seem strange to you, but you know, it is a real thing, yeah. Right? But you know, for me, I feel like many of you are understanding what I'm saying here. I've got to reprioritize my thoughts, my time, and my passions. I've got the time. It's just, what am I spending it on? And I'm just talking about me, I'm not talking about you. But I do feel like we're all probably in that same place. Yeah. I've got the time to be compassionate. And I've got the heart to be compassionate, but I got to act on the compassion. And so that's, you know, I hope that you understand what I'm saying. And if you're like me, I encourage you, let's do something about it together. Okay.
Yeah. And we've ended every one of these messages with some resources, like, hey, here's some books you can read about what we've been talking about. We got some resources today, but the more we talked about this, we're like, kind of feels weird to say read about service. You don't need to read about service. You know how to do it, right? I mean, just go do it. That's the resource. The resource is go volunteer somewhere. And it may be here in this church. It may be at the Well Outreach. It may be at your kid's school. I guarantee you, teacher, if you said, hey, I'll come read a book one Monday, if you let me know, you know, just go do it. Matter of fact, there's a lot of service opportunities that you don't even have to ask permission for. I saw somebody walking down Zion Road yesterday with a garbage bag picking up trash. He didn't have to ask anybody's permission to do that. That's just an act of service. He's just cleaning up his community. So, I mean, the whole thing here, like you say, yeah, time. Yeah, I don't have time. I don't have time. We got the time. It's just a question of priority. And so it's, you know, force ourselves to do this, because we believe that if we do it, it'll be a good thing. It'll help the community, and it'll help us grow spiritually.